Open your Bibles, if you will, to the book of Esther. Esther is an unusual book. Those of you who are familiar with the book of Esther know one of its peculiarities by what's not mentioned in it. Anybody have an idea what I'm talking about? God, that's right. And yet, God is in the background. He's in the shadows. He's throughout the book, using His providence to protect the nation that He would bring about His promise through. And so it's a book about the divine providence of God. Now, certainly, another purpose of the book for the Jewish nation, it gave the origin of one of their feast days, the Feast of Purim. But an overall view would be showing the divine providence of God and keeping His promises. All right, so let's begin with this woman, Esther. That was not her name that she had from her family. This was her Persian name. And so what race was she? Jewish, or Benjamite, that's right. Look in chapter 2, in verse 5. Sally says she was a Benjamite. This is where that comes from. There was a Jew in Susa, the capital, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. And you'll look down in verse 7. You'll see that he was bringing up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter. Down on your lesson, by the way, down at the bottom of the page under B, 2B, there's a mistake. Instead of saying cousin to Esther, I've got uncle to Esther. That should be cousin to Esther. And so, that being the case, this shows the connection of lineage that even Esther had. When you get over to chapter 4 and verse 16, 14, verse 14, when Mordecai was exhorting Esther to make a plea to the king for the sake of the nation, he said, "If you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place." Well, when you get to chapter 7 and verse 4, when she is before the king, she said, "We have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed." So you have the statement in chapter 2 about the lineage. And you have the connection with the Jews as being her people. So she was Persian in name, Esther, but in lineage and race, she was a Jew. Now, I've already answered question 1B. Her name corresponding to her race was Hadassah. It's interesting what these nations did when they took young captives. You remember when they took the four boys that we read about in the book of Daniel? They changed all their names. Was that to try to break the tie between their lineage and their culture? I don't know. Was it a mark of their victory and power? I don't know. But in those four boys' cases, they could change their name, but they couldn't change their faith. And in this young girl's name, they could change her name, but they could not obliterate her connection to the Jewish nation and her concern for the people that were the people of God. And so here's a young woman that, although she was away from the homeland and had her name changed, evidently she didn't change internally. And this is a lesson for young people. Wherever you move, wherever you go, whatever you may be called, if you can maintain a stable view of who you are and your connection, of course, with God Almighty. So here's Mordecai. We've already answered part of C. who is Mordecai and what is his relationship to Esther? Of course, he was her cousin, but there's more. As you look here at chapter 2 and verse 7, you'll see that evidently she was an orphan girl. She had neither father nor mother. And then if you look down at verse 15, you'll see that Mordecai had taken her as his daughter. So I guess you could call Mordecai a foster father. You might call him a father if you take it from the standpoint of adoption. Adoption is when a person takes a child under their care and treats them as their own. And so you have a case of that right here with Mordecai and Esther. And it seems like he raised her in with a knowledge of her heritage, of her being a Jew, and faith in God as the God of the Jews, as we read through the book. And so she was blessed to have that kind of person to take her into his care. She was in a Persian nation. What if she would not have had Mordecai? Where would she have ended up? In fact, we wouldn't be reading this story. And so the fact that she had a cousin, an older cousin, who was willing to take the responsibility of caring for her, plays a part in this whole plan of divine providence, this fellow Mordecai. All right, chapter 2. We find in chapter 1 that the Persian king, Xerxes or Ahasuerus, had more than one feast, in fact, and wanted to display his wife's beauty, Vashti, but she'd have no part of it, made him angry, and so he deposed her from being queen. And so in chapter 2, what you enter upon is there's a search for someone to be the queen, to take the place of Vashti. And it's interesting what you read here in verse 2. They're going to seek beautiful young virgins. I don't know how old Esther was at this time. She's young because she fits the qualifications that are being stated. But she is marriageable. Was she 18? Was she 20? 25? I don't know. Also interesting is that they were looking for virgins. And so young virgins to be sought for the king. You'll see in the next verse, they were looking for a beautiful young virgin to put into the harem. When you get down to verse 7, the writer of the book himself noted that she was beautiful of form and face. Oftentimes when young ladies are beautiful of form and face, they've got a beautiful body, they've got wonderful complexion. What does that lead to?
Vanity.
What? Vanity. There's a word in our society we use for people who are obsessed with their looks. What is it?
Narcissist.
What?
Narcissist.
Narcissistic, right? They're all concerned about their looks. You see a lot of people like that today. They're just obsessed with taking pictures of themselves, and they'll spend all kind of money on their personal appearance, and don't say anything against it. It becomes a really prideful, as Sally said, a very vain thing. And oftentimes they become very foolish in that. It's interesting that here's a woman who was a young woman who was very beautiful, but you don't see any of that sense of selfishness and self-indulgence in Esther. If it is, it's certainly not mentioned. In fact, just the opposite. She's willing to sacrifice herself for a higher purpose. And so a young woman can be a beautiful young woman and still have a sense of duty a sense of obligation, a sense of connection to something and someone bigger and better and greater than themselves. And that's what you have in the case of Esther. Another thing you'll note back in chapter 2 and verse 20, Esther had not yet made known her kindred or her people, even as Mordecai had commanded her. For Esther did what Mordecai told her, as she had done when under his care. So here's another thing. As Mordecai was raising this girl, though she was a beautiful young girl, she evidently respected this man who was not her biological father, a relative, but she had respect for his rule. And this is a credit to this young woman. In chapter 4, now here it says she had done what he said when she was under his care. In chapter 4 and verse 13 and 14, a little bit later in the story, when Mordecai is making this appeal to her to appear before the king and plead for the nation, in this case, now she's at an age where she can choose to obey Mordecai or not obey Mordecai. We talked in a recent lesson about duties based on relationships and how honor father and mother is a basic fundamental duty. But relationships change as people age. And so as people get to a different age, the idea of obedience, which is inherent in obeying father and mother, that changes as the person gets older. And you see that right here. And so, as a young girl, she did what she was told by Mordecai. She respected his rule, but now she's got to make a choice. She's on her own. She's old enough to make a choice about what she wants to do. And so you have some indication about the character of this young woman in these verses. Something else you'll note about this young woman here, in verse 20, she had not made known her kindred or her people. I don't know how much time had passed from the time she had been selected to the point we're at now. But Mordecai evidently had encouraged her not to do that. What character trait does this point to that she didn't spill the beans, as it were? What?
Trustworthy.
That's a good way to put it.
She was wise.
Okay.
She was a follower, so
I'd
be obedient to her.
Okay, yeah, obedience. We talked about that. I guess my question is not good. I was thinking about the idea of self-control, self-restraint. You know, can you trust somebody to keep something to themselves that you feel like it's wise, you mentioned wisdom, to do? And so this young girl, sometimes, you know, people can't keep anything a secret. But this young girl evidently did at the advice of her cousin, her older cousin Mordecai. So this also tells you something about this young woman. So you don't have to be a beautiful young woman like the world. You can be a beautiful young woman with character traits. And that's what you find in this case of Esther. Notice also in chapter 7 in verse 3, so she didn't let her beauty go to her head. That says something about her humility. And she had been chosen as queen. She didn't let that go to her head and completely ignore Mordecai's request. So it shows some degree of humility. In chapter 7, verse 3, when she was before the king, she said, "If I found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleased the king, let my life be given me as my petition and my people as my request." This again points to her humility. She's the queen, but she's treating the king with respect, as well it should be. In chapter 8 and verse 3, you'll see that when she spoke to the king, she fell at his feet, wept, and implored him to divert the evil scheme of Haman the Agagite. And so again, you see the humility of this young woman. We mentioned that sometimes the idea of beauty can cause a person to be filled with pride, but this didn't happen evidently to this young woman. In chapter 8 and verse 6, "How can I endure to see the calamities which will befall my people? How can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred?" Here you see that she had some sense of loyalty to her nation. It was not all about Esther, just whatever I can do to save my neck. She was willing to put her neck on the line, as it were, for the good of the nation. She could rise above self and be loyal to her people. And in chapter 4, you see another trait of this young woman. So let's start reading. Verse 9. Hathach came back and related Mordecai's words to Esther. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and ordered him to reply to Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that for any man or woman who come to the king, Mordecai encouraged her to go to the king. He had learned about this plot. But she said, anybody that come to the king in the inner court who's not summoned, he has but one law, that he be put to death, unless the king holds out to him the golden scepter so that he may live. And I have not been summoned to come to the king for these 30 days. Now, why hadn't the king summoned her for 30 days? We don't know. The writer doesn't tell us. But she saw that there was a potential danger since he had not summoned her for 30 days. Was there something going on in the kingdom that had him in a state of consternation? I don't know. They didn't want to be bothered. Was there something that he was displeased with her? Nothing about that in the text. But for some reason, he hadn't called her for 30 days. And so if she goes in there, the penalty is death if he hadn't summoned her. So this is a serious matter with her to go to the king to make this appeal. So here's a young woman. You know, when you think about young people and their lives are ahead of them, the three young boys that we studied about, they were told to bow down to the idol. I don't know exactly what their ages were. We know they were very young, teenagers evidently, when they were taken captives. And so Nebuchadnezzar says, you got to bow down to my image. They refused. He said, if you don't bow down, we're going to throw you in the furnace of fire. How could they have reasoned about that's not a good idea? You know, our lives are ahead of us. If we get burnt up in a fire, we'll never be able to talk about God to anybody. And so, you know, for this one event, we'll go worship that idol and we'll be sorry, but you know, our whole lives are ahead of us. They didn't do that. So you do whatever you want to do, king. We're not going to bow to your image. And so here's a choice this girl's got to make. So her cousin has pled with her. She's in a unique position. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But she's in a unique position by the providence of God. And he's pleading with her to use that for the good of the nation. But she could die. It could cost her life. She's a young woman. Her life is ahead of her. And so sometimes young people make decisions based on, I don't want to sacrifice all the years ahead of me instead of what's the right thing to do. But this young woman had to make that choice on this particular occasion. So Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not imagine that you in the king's palace can escape more than all the Jews. Sometimes we need to hear things that are unpleasant. That's what Mordecai told her. So you may die just like the rest of us. And he said, if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows? Now, this is a key statement that we want to look at throughout our class tonight. Who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this? We titled the lesson, Young Woman, Who is at the Right Place at the Right Time to Make a Difference. Isn't that what Mordecai is saying? Who knows? Now, if you don't, I'm confident Mordecai says God's going to do something to save his people. But you may be the person that God's put in this place at this time for that purpose. And we've got young people in this audience tonight. You don't know what lies ahead of you. You don't know. But you're going to have choices to make at school, at college, when you get married, after you're married. And choices that may be pretty difficult because of the potential consequences. But who knows what God has in store for you ahead if you prove yourself. If you choose, if you have the courage, if you have the humility, if you have the loyalty, the understanding and faith to make the right choice, who knows but what God can use you further down the line. We studied about another young person that faced that very thing, didn't we? There was a young person we studied about that could have possibly really bettered his position. That's right, Joseph. Because his master's wife enticed him to have a relationship with him. But he would not do it. Was it because he's afraid he'd lose his head? What was the reason that he gave? Sin against God. That's it. Did Joseph know that after 2 years in prison, he would become the ruler of Egypt? Is there any indication he knew that? The only possible thing was that dream he had. But what did all that mean? My father and my brothers are all going to bow down to me. But here he is at this age, somewhere between 17 and 28, when this happens. And then later he becomes the ruler of Egypt. And what an amazing story. But had he not made that choice, you might not be reading the story of Joseph. But he made that choice, which ended up, in his case, getting him thrown in prison. But that was a training grounds for something else to happen. And it was that event that led to his name being brought up to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh had the dreams. So God's in the background in our lives. Because he's not unseen does not mean he's unreal. And that's the nature of providence. Yes, Ennis? Okay. Yeah, Abraham showed his faith in doing what God said, even though he was his son of promise. And that's exactly right. All right, so we asked the question under 1E, what honor was bestowed upon her? Go back to chapter 2:17. What is that honor? She became the queen of all these beautiful women that were brought to the king. What would this appeal to in her? Pride. Is pride devastating? Oh, it is indeed. Pride's why Nebuchadnezzar got so mad, you remember? Pride is why the Jews hated Jesus. Pride is why Cain killed his brother. Pride is behind so much. And so this was another way that Satan, avenue Satan could have used to destroy. What was it that caused, one of the things that caused Eve to eat of the tree? What? Yeah, pride. Make you wise like God. You'll know good from evil. And so pride is a dangerous thing. So here are all these women. Probably a lot of beautiful women. But here a Jewish woman, not a Persian woman. That's another thing. A Jewish woman is the one that pleased the king and was chosen. look at chapter 3. So, let's look at chapter 7. Let me go to chapter 7, verse 4. Then we can go back to chapter 3. Chapter 7, verse 4. I ask you the question, what did she accomplish? That verse answers it exactly. What did she accomplish?
Save the people.
Save the nation from being annihilated. How many thousands? I don't know how many Jews. Men, women, and children. How many of lies did this woman say without lifting a sword? By using the opportunities at hand. By having courage. By using her wisdom. And so it says here in verse 4, we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. And so, back in chapter 3, that first verse that I turned you to in verse 13, this is talking about Haman's plot. Haman became very angry with Mordecai. Can you tell me why? Because he wouldn't bow down to him. What would you call that character trait in Mordecai?
Arrogance.
Arrogance, pride. Here we're back to pride again. And so pride drives him to want to kill Mordecai and the Jews. And so in verse 13, letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old. Women and children in one day. So this is going to be a devastating event. And who's going to stand in the gap? Who's going to stop it? Where's a Samson? Where's a David? Where's a Gideon? No, it's a young, beautiful woman. Young woman. Who God used to stand in the gap. Isn't that interesting? We think about preachers and we say, boy, that God needs preachers. We need elders. And he does. And elders, strong men. But you ladies, who knows? We talked about this Sunday when we talked about motherhood. You know how the Apostle Paul had a man to accompany him on his second preaching journey that was responsible. Why? Where did it go back to? Who did it go back to?
Mother
and grandmother. Mother and grandmother. And then he called him his fellow worker. And he called him God's fellow worker. And he told the Philippians, I don't have anybody I can trust like this that's really concerned for the brethren. And when he wanted somebody to go back and check on the Thessalonians, he said, I got this guy. I'll send him back to encourage him. But it's traceable back. That's all you know about him. A mother and grandmother who had faith. Who taught that little boy from the time he was little. And so here we find this woman, young woman, having such potential for influence over a lot of people's lives and over future history.
Steve?
Yes.
The head of the women that kept the women. She wasn't vindictive. She wasn't rebellious. You know, and even here, she's not being vindictive of herself.
Good point. Even in when she was taken, not only from her homeland, but from her cousin who had raised her. And, of course, that would easily appeal to pride. But yet, she didn't act vindictive or ugly and used that opportunity. And it turned into the story that you're reading. So that's a good point that Linda makes. All right, so we go to question number 2. You didn't know question number 1 would take 30 minutes, did you? But here we are in question number 2. But really, this is the whole point that we wanted to get to in our study tonight. And that's this statement, which is so thought-provoking. And it's one I wish that we could just root in the hearts of the young people here. When you come to crossroads in life, think about Esther and this statement. Who knows? Who knows? You don't know whose lives you might impact. I could go through this audience and talk about people today that have influenced you, but way back in their history, there's possibly a mother, a father, or somebody else who influenced them. And here they are, possibly serving as an elder or a faithful brother or sister in Christ, a teacher, an encourager, because of the influence that someone had. So who knows here in verse 14. But what you have attained royalty for such a time as this. So you may be successful. You may become you may make money. Who knows what you may be. You may marry into a prestigious family. Maybe there's a purpose in that other than selfishness, other than to gratify personal pride. You know, when you look at all these events, it makes you ask the question why these things happened, but not only why they happened, when they happened, the way they happened, and who brought it about for what purpose. Let's look at some of these events. First of all, you got this girl orphaned from a despised race. She's in a foreign land. She becomes queen of the Persian Empire and becomes the means of saving God's nation. Who would have ever thought that kind of person would be the one who would save the nation? You would think of David, Joshua, a Gideon. But no, this young woman. But look at these events that took place we have under B. Consider these events. And right at the end of this list that I have, I've got a question I want you to think about as we go through them. What if any one of these things had not happened? Would the outcome be the same? So let's look at some of these key events that we read about. First of all, the orphan girl, she becomes a Persian queen. But then secondly, Mordecai, her uncle. Now note in chapter 2, verse 19, when the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. Why was he at the king's gate? I don't know. Suppose on that day he had been out on a task somewhere. But he happened to be sitting at the king's gate. But there's more. Esther had not made known her kindred or her people, even as Mordecai had commanded her. Verse 21. In those days, while Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's officials from those who guarded the door, became angry and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. But the plot became known to Mordecai. What if Mordecai had not found out about this plot? And if he hadn't been at the gate where these guys were, probably wouldn't. But there's more. He found out about the plot, and he told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king. What if he had not told the king? What difference would that have made? Suppose when Haman made his plan, it had been a different king, who didn't favor Esther like this king did. And the very fact that he knew what happened, and verse 23 said they investigated and found it to be so. These guys were hanged on the gallows, but there's a little statement there at the end of that verse that becomes very key. It was written in the book of the Chronicles in the king's presence. There was a record made of what happened and what Mordecai did. So, go over to chapter 6. Over in chapter 5, you see in verse, Esther has this banquet with the king. But then in verse 9 through verse 14, you see Haman is making plans to hang Mordecai, has a gallows built. But here, look at the turn of events. During that night. So he makes his plan to hang Mordecai. And so he was happy, his family's happy. Ah, get rid of my enemy, this guy who doesn't respect me. During that night, the king could not sleep. So he gave an order to bring the book of the records, the chronicles. And they were read before the king. He couldn't go turn on the TV. They didn't have one. Couldn't sleep. He said, well, get the records. I want to read the records. Read them to me. It was found written what Mordecai had reported concerning Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who were the doorkeepers, that they had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. So that little event that happened earlier, not only the event, but that it was written down. Now he has that read. He said, what honor and dignity bestowed on Mordecai for this? The king's servants who attended him said, nothing's been done for him. The king said, who's in the court? Now Haman had just entered the court. How about that? Again, what if Haman had been somewhere else? What if it had been a day or two later? But it was that night he couldn't sleep. It was that night he had the books read. It was that night he was reminded of what Mordecai did. And who's in the court? Oh, Haman is. And he wanted to speak to the king about what you read about at the end of chapter 5, about hanging Mordecai. So king's servant said to him, behold, Haman is standing at the court. The king said, let him come in. Haman came in, and the king said to him, what is to be done for the man for whom the king desires to honor? What have we been talking about as a character trait that gets people in trouble? Pride. Really got him in trouble here. Well, that's got to be me. Got to be me. And so king said, what are we going to do? Haman said to himself, who would the king desire to honor more than me? Haman said to the king, for the man whom the king desires to honor, let them bring a royal robe, which is the king has worn, the horse on which the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown has been placed. Let the robe and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them array the man whom the king desires to honor and lead on horseback through the city square and proclaim before him, this it shall be done to the man whom the king desires to honor. Boy, he can see star of beauty, man. The king said to Haman, take quickly the robes and the horses you have said and do so for Mordecai. Oh, my goodness. You know, it would be beautiful to have a picture of his face about then. Good grief. Haman took the robe and the horse, raid Mordecai, led him on horseback through the city square. You talk about humiliating. He's leading the horse that Mordecai's riding on these royal robes. And proclaiming, you know, this will be done for the man the king desires to honor. So verse 12, Haman hurried home, mourning with his head covered. He didn't want to see anybody to see him. So he told his wife what had happened, verse 13. And the wise men in Zeresh, his wife said, if Mordecai, before whom you've begun to fall, is of Jewish origin, you'll not overcome, but will surely fall before him. What does that tell you that these people knew? Something about the Jews, something about their history, something about they had a God who protected them. They knew something. And while they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hastily brought Haman to the banquet. Man, talk about a turn of events. But he's not dead yet. And the king doesn't know what he's plotted yet. So she has this banquet. This time she says, you know, there's people that want to destroy us, verse 4. And the king said, who in the world want to do that? Verse 5. And she said, well, it's the wicked Haman. Boy, now the king's mad. Things are really getting bad. But wait, it gets worse. So he went to the garden. Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther, for he saw the harm that had been determined against him by the king. When the king returned from the palace garden into the place where they were drinking wine, you talk about timing. Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. The king said, will he even assault the queen with me in the house? What is this guy doing? Well, that sealed his fate. And so they covered Haman's face, took him out, hung him on what gallows? the one he built for Mordecai. So you have all these little turns of events that point to a hand behind the scenes. You know, the providence of God. Hold your finger here at Esther. Go to Acts chapter 24. Acts chapter 24. Look at verse 2. This is Tertullus began to talk to the governor. And he said, since we have through you attained much peace, and since by your providence reforms are carried out for this nation, we acknowledge this in every way and everywhere, most excellent Felix. So, during his reign, apparently a lot of wicked men were brought to justice. There were indications are from secular records that a lot of civil reforms took place. I wonder how many people Felix arrested. How many times he shot at somebody and didn't shoot a sword? None. But he says, you did it. How did he do it? He provided for it to be done. Providence. He used his power and he used his authority. He used the things at his disposal to cause it to be done. No miracles involved. Nothing supernatural. And God's providence, he provides for things to happen. Doesn't necessarily involve miracles. He uses people. He uses circumstances to cause things to be done. So Felix's authority was very limited. Of course, God's is not. And this is the God we serve. And he looks for people to use for his purposes. And young people in this audience, got a 14-year-old here, we've got a 17-year-old there, got various ages back on the back pew. Who knows? Chapter 4:14. What God may have in store for you. Who knows? But it'll depend on the choices you make. So we have these other things listed that we've talked about. And the rest of this list. So as a result of all this, a royal decree was authorized by the king. It gave the Jews, they couldn't rescind his decree that he had already made, but he made a different one. And he allowed the Jews to kill their attackers, defend themselves. That's what they did. And then there was this feast set up in remembrance of this, the Feast of Purim. And so this gives the Jews the history of that feast that was critical to the existence of their nation. You know, when you look back at the book of Ezra, we'll finish up here. Look at the book of Ezra. Ezra divides into two parts, the first six chapters and chapter 7 through the end. In between those two chapters is a period of about 58 years. That's where Esther fits. There would be no chapter 7 following, like it's written today, without the story of Esther. And sometimes you don't know. Just so happens in this case, the Holy Spirit gave us some insight to what happened in that gap that allowed the rest of this story to be written that you have in the book of Ezra. Okay, any questions, comments?